Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Keith, you ready to call it a season for the Celtics?
No, I'm not. I wanted more basketball. I convinced myself that there might be some more basketball. There is no more basketball.
I was convinced.
Yeah. No, I know you were. But I'm not ready. It's the middle of May. This team should have been playing in June. So I'm very disappointed. Very saddened.
Season over. I think a lot of people are saddened, not just with it being done, but how it went down.
Yeah.
It was as ugly as it gets.
Holy mackerel.
Never a game. Never competitive. And now it's abruptly over. Big changes looming over the franchise, as we discussed now for weeks and months. You guys know the deal. You can dial us up, 617-779-7937. It's how you get in touch all day long with Jones and Keefe. That's your phone and text number. You can interact Twitter and Instagram at Jones and Keefe. You can watch and chat twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Always a healthy chat going on Twitch. And on YouTube, just subscribe to WEEI. Friday, Keefe, was not what I saw coming. Rough.
Bloodbath.
What happened?
It was, they played so well in Game 5, and so many things went their way, but at the same time, so many things didn't go the Knicks' way, right? Like, they had guys really, really struggled, and so you're wondering, right, could that keep up, or if that evens out a little bit, what is it going to look like in Game 6? Well, the reality is, some of the guys for the Celtics turned back into a pumpkin, right? Luke Kornet, hero game in Game 5. Nobody expected it in Game 6, didn't get it in Game 6. I was also looking on the other side, though, because OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges were horrible in Game 5. Could you keep those guys down again? As soon as they started hitting their first couple of shots, I was like, oh, no. Like, this is not good. This is not the formula for the Celtics to win this game. They played three games in the playoffs without Tatum. I think the first game against the Magic, like, okay, that's probably what they are. The first game against the Knicks, they played way better than they were. And then the second game against the Knicks, they played like as bad as they could. They were rushing their shots. It felt like we were complimenting them so much in Game 5 about the ball movement and finding the best shot and at times not even being a three. It seemed like in Game 6, there was too many guys being like, I got it. I'll take it from here. And you're like, that's not a good look. That's early in the shot clock. That's another brick. And then the misses just started to pile up on each other. They didn't play great defense. I mean, there's really nothing they did well in Game 6.
No.
It was start to finish, just a dump of a game.
Poured it on. I mean, the Knicks just poured it on. It was closer than maybe you remember at the end of the first. It was only a six-point game then. But from there,
it felt like it was already starting to get out of reach.
I agree. It completely felt that way. It already felt like it was slipping away. They were down 6. The only guy who could score was Jaylen. And then Knicks outscore them 38-17 in the second quarter, and it's a rout from there. So, yeah, what happened? It all caught up to him. I thought they weren't a better team without Tatum. I thought it might have been a better matchup without Tatum. I thought Tatum almost single-handedly, not to oversimplify it, but I thought he was a big, big factor in losing the first two games. He was so bad in the fourth quarter, and they moved the ball so well in Game 5, as you just said, that I thought maybe for this matchup they'd be better off without him. Wrong. They needed a guy like that Game 6. You needed another guy to lean on. Jaylen, as we've come to find out, not just isn't 100%, might need surgery to repair his torn meniscus.
Yeah.
So
great.
You have a hobbled Jaylen Brown. Who knows what the hell's going on with Porzingis? Tatum's gone for probably the next year. And so it all caught up to him. Now,
old guys got real old right before our eyes.
It doesn't mean you let him off the hook for how they played, because they were atrocious in Game 6, and we can get into why and how and the coaching and everything else. But I do think a lot of those factors caught up to him. But they were losing this series either way, even before Tatum went down. They were losing this. In retrospect, I was believing late last week. But in retrospect, they were losing this thing either way.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you can look at this series and say, oh, they would have beaten the Knicks if they had Tatum. They had him for four games, and they were down 3-1. So I'm with you. They lose the series whether Tatum's there or not. They lose the series whether Jaylen Brown's knee injury is there or not. They got outplayed in the series. Another reason why, Game 5 to Game 6 was so different was Derek White. I mean, Derek White was so good, and even though we talked a lot about Jaylen Brown and a lot about Luke Kornet, Derek White was hitting his threes. He scored 34 points, which was a team high. He was atrocious in Game 6. You don't usually see a number like this. He played 30 minutes. You notice his plus minus?
I did.
Derek White was minus 45.
We're going to talk to Terp at high noon. Terp tweeted all these out. I believe it was the worst of his career if I saw that.
How could that not be? That's going to be the worst of almost anybody's career. How are you on the floor for that much time and you're minus 45? He had 8 points in the game. Game six, he made 7 threes. This game, he scored 8 points. So you just didn't have anybody really doing. I thought earlier, like Jaylen Brown was kind of trying, but obviously he's a little bit banged up. But even still, like a banged up Brown being your best player, also not a recipe for a win. But yeah, just really frustrating, I think, because of how convincing their game five victory was. And, you know, maybe bad job by us having short memories. You see in the playoffs, in the history of basketball, some lopsided games don't carry over to the next game. Happens all the time. Teams that win series lose by 30 in a series, right? They won the series, but hey, you lost game three by 30. Like, what the hell happened there? So game six just wasn't anything like game five. I mean, the Celtics couldn't throw it in the ocean. They also couldn't stop anybody. And then once the Knicks got rolling, that second quarter, I mean, for sure the game was over.
Derek White, minus 45, career high. This is Terp's tweet from the other week, other day.
Yeah, yeah.
Jaylen was a minus 33, career high. Drew Holiday, second worst of his career, minus 34. Horford, third worst of his career, which is not a short career, minus 33. So non-competitive, and again,
not great, Bob. No.
What if I told you this? Baylor Shireman, plus 3.
Well, how about that? Nice.
Torrey Craig,
yeah,
plus 7.
Wow.
Should have put Megan Thee Stallion's boyfriend out there sooner.
Get him out there. Would have worked out a little bit better. Who deserves the most blame for Game six? I mean, I think, again, overall, I put a lot of blame early in the series on Tatum. Best player on the floor, at least he should be, in theory. And he was, I thought, horrendous in those first two games. Can't blame him for the other night. Yeah, yeah. So who deserves the most blame?
I'm going to put it on the backcourt, actually. I know Jaylen Brown's their best player left, but I think Drew Holiday and Derek White played so poorly. And I do expect that a lot out of those guys. I mean, Derek White, we give him the praises all the time. Every team in the league would want Derek White. Team USA wanted Derek White. Like, he is such a good glue-type player, but he can do more. And with Tatum out, you needed his scoring to be more. And then also Drew Holiday, which I really thought was the missing piece last year, pushed them over the top and won a title. I'm not expecting 20 points and, you know, 12 assists out of Drew Holiday anymore, but those two guys together shot 4 of 19 from the field. And it's not like their great defense was offsetting things on the other side. You know, Jalen Brunson was able to get what certainly enough of what he needed. They had a balanced scoring attack. So you weren't scoring on offense. You weren't taking away the best player on the other side. Like,
what were you doing there?
So I'd put it on the backcourt.
Text line agrees with you. 617-779-7937. You're not going to mention the effort. Drew Holiday didn't even sweat all game. I would focus on Jalen. I'll be consistent.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, we gave him all this praise in game five for, what were the numbers? 12 assists versus 2 turnovers off the top of my head, something like
12
that.
12 and 2.
6 assists against 7 turnovers. And for a while, he was the only guy scoring, right? He was the only guy who could score early in the game. But you talk about them pressing and trying to put it all on their shoulders and not being able to do it. I think he was the most guilty of that. He fouled out of the game on top of it. So, look, we give him credit for stepping up when the team needed him. He didn't the other night. He needed to be the best guy out there. He wasn't. And so I'd look at Jaylen. Neither of us said the coach. I think a lot of people would say the coach. How much is on Mazzulla?
I mean, probably as much as you can put on a coach. Like, for the game or for the series? Because I think for the series, I had some more questions early on. I mean, this game kind of got away from him. It was almost like, all right, what could you do? What could any coach really do at that point? You could argue, like, how do you not get these guys ready? Well, there should be some self-motivation in an elimination game. I have more issues with, you know, not calling timeout, running the same play twice, like certain things that he did earlier in the series more so than even this one. But we had the stat, you know, as the playoffs were going on, the 5 head coaches prior to Mazzulla to win a title aren't with their team, or 4 out of those 5 aren't with their team right now. And part of it is this trend has continued where the NBA champion the next year loses in the second round. So we're not seeing the days of back-to-back titles, three-peats, these like dynasties forming. We're seeing such a deep league and these top teams getting picked off the next year. But the talent's obviously there. So a lot of other teams have decided, like, all right, maybe the coach needs to change. Maybe we swap the coach out. So I thought it was a very disappointing playoff run for Missoula, but I'm almost always going to put more blame on the players than the coach. It's like I'm always going to give more credit to the players than the coach.
I thought they could survive a shooting night like they had and beat New York on the road. I think we even specifically said, I'm like, if they shoot like they shot in game two, which was 10 out of 40 from three, and we always hone in on the three-point numbers, Missoula wants us to hone in on them, so let's do it. I think I even said if they shoot like they shoot in game two, yeah, I think they can go on the road and win. They shot better. They were 12 out of 40. Not great by any means, 30%.
No. And some of that's garbage time with garbage players.
But, I mean, it's as simple as looking at it and saying Missoula told them to hoist up threes. When they made them in game five, they won. Yep. When they didn't, they didn't. And so, you know, I think a lot of people are taking a critical look at Missoula and what he does. I was surprised. We're going to play this for you coming up. Scal, I think, even took a little bit of a shot at Missoula. At least that's who I think he's talking about. You can tell me who you think he's talking about. We play it for you.
It was a cryptic kind of
very cryptic
review of the game.
Cryptic is the right way to put it. So do you think there's any chance Missoula's fired this offseason?
I don't.
Me neither.
I don't think it's right after this year. And I also, in a weird way, Tatum's injury might give him more job security. I think if Tatum was back next year, regardless of some of the other pieces that they move on from, which we're going to be talking about today throughout the rest of the offseason, I think if they fall short next year, I could see Missoula being fired after next year. But now I'm not sure. Now without Tatum, I think Missoula's probably safe for like two more years.
We said this last week. Oddly enough, the Tatum injury gave Missoula some job security. Like oddly enough, all of a sudden, I feel like he's pretty secure. And that does not mean he's a perfect head coach.
No.
I think he's fine. You know, and I largely agree with you on this, Keith. How much can you really put on a coach? How much can you really give credit to a coach? I think that's hard to do. But they couldn't win with Udoka. They couldn't win with Stevens. They did win with him. He deserves credit for that. I know it was a different roster and a better roster.
Yeah.
He deserves credit for not getting in the way a year ago, where at times, you know, the coaches would get in the way or they couldn't get the most out of the players. I'll give him credit for that. I'm not firing him. I know a lot of people are done with him and want him fired. So you can discuss that. It's 617-779-7937. I want to play you two clips from post-game on Friday, or maybe even some of it was the breakup interviews Saturday as well. But I thought these were kind of different ends of the spectrum. Let me hear from Derek White after the Celtics lost in Game 6 to New York on Friday.
It sucks. We're never going to get this season back. Never going to have the exact same team again. And so, obviously, there was some highs and obviously some lows of a season. But at the moment, it just, I mean, you're just kind of down.
Okay, kind of down. Makes sense.
Down.
You're eliminated.
Highs and lows. I don't know how many highs, but
there weren't a ton of highs.
It's fine. You get the magic.
But when he says we're never going to have the exact same team again, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, they're just not. I mean, like, Al Horford's a free agent. He's probably going to be gone. With everybody knows that.
But
they
you think that's what he's talking about? Just like some more bottom of the roster kind of things? Or you think he's talking bigger?
Both. Well, and he knows Tatum's out for all of next year, right? So, like, the roster next year, even if they decide to pay everybody, it's going to be different next year. But these guys are obviously very well aware of what's going on.
Well,
I mean, we talk about it on a daily basis.
That, to me, is my takeaway from the comment, too. It's like,
they know.
Don't tell me these guys weren't aware, didn't know. It's not on their minds. They're not thinking about it. Maybe it doesn't impact them, like, on the floor in the middle of the game. Yeah. I have no idea. Don't tell me they weren't thinking. Derek White volunteers that up after
they
get eliminated. He's like, oh, yeah, we're never going to have this same team again. It sucks.
Yeah, but you could make the case, I don't know, last year even, like, they kept all their top guys. But as a guy finishing his season in the NBA, you know that you don't take the, whatever, 12, 13, 15 guys and bring them back the next year.
Well, so, look.
So there's also some of that.
When he says the exact same team, it could be some of
it
that.
It just never happens.
Maybe he was being very precise and talking about bottom of the roster players and not higher up. This was Jalen talking about the future of the Celtics as well. Again, we assume there will be changes. I thought Jalen took a bit of a different track than Derek White.
It's a lot to be excited for. This journey is not the end. It's not the end for me. I'm looking forward to coming back stronger, you know. So, you know, you just take this with your chin up. You know, I know Boston, you know, it looks gloomy.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Right now, you know, obviously with JT being out and us, you know, kind of ending the year, but it's a lot to look forward for. It's a lot to look forward to, and I want the city to feel excited about that. Like, this is not the end. So I'm looking forward to what's next.
What'd you think of that sales pitch?
Very positive spin, I guess. I you know, the season didn't kind of come to an end. First of all, Jalen, the season's over. Like, the season's for sure over. And yeah, it's a downer. I mean, it just, to what degree, how far away are they going to be? How much are they going to blow it up? A lot of that is very much out of his control, and we also don't know the answer. Like, is Holiday, Porzingis, Hauser to a lesser degree, Cornette, are they all gone? And then it's just Jaylen Brown and other guys, and Derek White and guys they can afford. Is Jaylen Brown possibly gone? Like, I mean, there's so many different things that they could do to this team that we don't even know. He's trying to put a positive spin on it, which I respect. He's the one that's going to have to go out there. He's going to be the face of this, like, next, I assume. And
I mean, he assumes. I mean, look, yeah. I mean, and maybe that's a guy who's been assured of something. Maybe not. Maybe he's just talking like he expects to be here, and he has no idea. But that sounds like a guy who thinks he's going to be back and is selling the whole fan base on, hey, don't skip out on us next year when we don't have Tatum. I mean, that's what it sounded like.
No, he's trying to pull it. I just feel like it's going to be a long year. Now, I don't think it's going to be check tankathon because, oh, look at the lottery. Like, I don't think it's going to be one of those years. As a Celtics fan, we've done that multiple times. I don't think it's going to be that. But is it going to be, hey, you're, you know, a couple games over 500, you're the sixth seed, and, you know, who do you got in the first round of the playoffs? I think it's more likely that, which for some fan bases is great, and that's like, hey, a shot in the arm. I'm sure Orlando was thrilled to have the season that they had to make the playoffs with their young guys. But when it was championship or bust for a while, next year is going to be the first year in like 6 years where it's not championship or bust. I mean, if you're saying championship next year with that roster, like, I don't know what to tell you.
No, I wouldn't say it. They should be a playoff team. I think they should be a playoff team. I would sit here handicapping it now. I don't know what other teams are going to do this offseason.
Yeah.
But handicapping it now, they should probably win a series next year. Like, be in the mix to beat a team in round one. Who did New York beat in round one? Could they beat a team like Detroit next year? Maybe. You know, who did Indiana beat in round one?
Milwaukee.
Thank you. Could you beat a team like that?
Especially without Giannis? Milwaukee won't be there.
Okay, but that level of team, like a 48-50 win team, like sitting here today, I think that's what they should be, assuming big pieces are back. But I don't know. They're meeting with Cooper Flagg. Like, who knows who's going to be back? I have no idea what they're going to look like.
Yeah, I don't think they're a play-in team. Like, I think they're better than that. And then if you're the play-in team, obviously you have to play the top two seeds. So I think if they're somewhere between 3, 4, 5, 6, then yeah, they could be competitive and win a playoff series. But that's kind of what it is. Like, the last 4 years, it was like, who are they going to face in the finals?
I agree. It is not championship or bust. Yeah. It's like, get to the playoffs. Can you win a round? That to me would be the expectation and what would make for a successful year. But it's a long way to go with a lot of potential moves.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. A new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because, like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.